For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good morning. Welcome, everyone. So for those of you who are new, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zengate. 10 years ago today, I became an immigrant, a refugee from California Zen. I arrived in Chicago, relocated permanently to Chicago. I've been visiting here as a teacher to the group Ancient Dragon Zengate that had formed. But 10 years ago today, I arrived and I stayed at Kathy's apartment in Hendersonville. Hi, Kathy. Asian Nancy and his son Eric were part of the group then also. And then the next day, 10 years ago tomorrow, drove down to the new apartment I had rented in Roscoe Village and drove through. There was a substantial amount of snow, and it was much colder than now. So in 10 years, we've had increasingly record heat. I don't know, maybe it's more pleasant for us now, but it's not, the effects for the planet are not going to be better. And our new administration is dedicated to increasing the rate of this situation. But anyway, 2 years after that, we rented this space, this lovely, intimate storefront temple here. And we've been developing this wonderful, great, lively sangha that we are now, today. So thank you all for being here. It makes me very happy to see all of you and to sit with all of you. And so here we are providing this opportunity to practice Zazen for people in Chicago in this little storefront, non-residential temple. So this practice of Zazen is about allowing ourselves, each of us and together, to deepen our awareness, to settle more and more fully into this realization of this background, ultimate reality, this deep communion with all being and all things that happens, that is happening all the time, but that we make real by engaging in this practice. So to settle more and more deeply in this practice, this opportunity of Zazen allows us to deepen this reality. To practice this ongoing, well, we call it Buddha, this sense of, you know, any word I say isn't it? These are just words, but the experience of being really present. Of feeling our breath, of being present in this body, mind, that is not separate from all the people we have ever known, or will ever know, actually, from all the beings on Irving Park Road and North Center Chicago, and to settle more and more deeply into this awareness. To be present and upright on our seat. This is wonderful. And, you know, it's just ordinary. It's actually something that people can do, that all beings can do. And here we are, and we make this available to each other and to ourselves and to anyone who wants to come. So I'm glad that there are some people here who had Zazen instruction in our tradition for the first time. Welcome. And we also emphasize creative expression of this reality on our seats, in our Zazen, but also in our everyday activities in the world. So, for people who have been here before, I'm not going to say anything new today, but I wanted to just, you know, talk about our practice and what it means. And I'm going to read one of the short talks by Eihei Dogen, the 13th century Japanese teacher, Japanese monk who founded this tradition, brought it back from China to Japan. So this is just a short talk, but I'll read the whole thing first and then talk about it. He said, "The family style of all Buddhas and ancestors is to first arouse the vow to save all living beings by removing suffering and providing joy. Only this family style is inexhaustibly bright and clear. In the lofty mountains, we see the moon for a long time. As clouds clear, we first recognize the sky. Cast loose down the precipice, the moonlight shares itself within the 10,000 forms. Even when climbing up the bird's path, taking good care of yourself is spiritual power." So that's the whole talk. He gave around 1250. So just to go through it a little bit, he says the family style of all Buddhas and ancestors. So this is what we call, what he founded, is what we call the Soto Zen tradition of Buddhism. But it's really just the family style of all Buddhas and ancestors. Buddhas just means awakened ones. So it's not limited to, I'm not talking about Buddhism. You don't have to be a Buddhist to be here. We have Catholics here, we have Muslims here. The family style of all Buddhas and ancestors is to first arouse the vow to save all living beings by removing suffering and providing joy. That's what our practice is about. To care, to dedicate ourselves to liberating all living beings. We sit on our cushion. This is not a self-help technique. It includes ourselves. But it's about our deep connection with everything and everyone, all beings. And we try to remove suffering and provide joy. To liberate all beings. He says only this family style, only this way of being is inexhaustibly bright and clear. Then he says, in the lofty mountains, we see the moon for a long time. So Dogen founded a temple, a Heiji, way up in the remote mountains in Japan. Here we are practicing in the big city, Chicago, near a lake. But when he talks about seeing the moon in the lofty mountains for a long time, he's talking about our Zazen practice. So for people who just had meditation instruction here for the first time today, we emphasize doing this regularly. It takes a while, and it takes steady, regular sitting every day or several times a week at least for a long time to see the moon, to see wholeness, to see this possibility of being present and whole and connecting with all beings. Human beings do not need to be committed to greed and anger and hatred and confusion and warfare and stealing and corruption. That's been most of human history. And most of what seems to be happening, you know, in our society now. Of course, other things are happening in our society now. Great creative expressions of resistance to that and freedom. Anyway, in the lofty mountains, we see the moon for a long time. When we engage in this practice for a long time, we see this possibility of wholeness. We see this reality of wholeness. As clouds clear, we first recognize the sky. So this is, you know, traditional Zen expression to use nature metaphors to talk about our reality. As our confusion clears, as we see clearly, we recognize the sky, the openness, the possibility of openness and clarity. Of spaciousness. That is also part of, not part of, that is the underlying and background reality of our lives. Then he says, cast loose down the precipice from the mountaintop. The moonlight flowing down the mountain stream shares itself within the 10,000 forms. So we don't practice just for ourselves. When we start, as we do this practice over a long time, how we are in the world is shared within within everything in our lives, with all the people we are engaged with during the week. The moonlight shares itself within the 10,000 forms. And then he says, even when climbing up the bird's path, even when we are open to the sky and engaging in the path that is beyond manipulations and stages and, you know, calculations. He says, taking care of yourself, of good care of yourself, is spiritual power. So we come back to this practice of just sitting upright. We take good care of ourselves. We see our own deep ingrained patterns of grasping, of craving, of anger and confusion. How do we take care of those? So greed and anger and confusion are natural parts of being human. How do we take care of those negative emotions? We don't try and suppress them. They keep coming up. And if we're paying attention, I saw this sign, the Women's March. If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention, of course. And that's an old bumper sticker. So, yeah, how do we take care of our anger? How do we take care of our caring? How do we take care of ourselves in the middle of that? So we come back to our cushion and pay attention and see how we're feeling. Feel how we're feeling. Take care of our negative emotions. Use them. Use the energy of anger. Use the energy of greed. Turn those to being tools for liberating all living beings and removing suffering and providing joy. This is our practice. So this very short talk by Dogen includes the whole of our practice life. And we keep coming back and paying attention. So as we sit, we're not trying to get rid of thoughts and feelings. We're not trying to get rid of difficult sensations. We're facing the wall and facing ourselves. We're not built. We don't face the wall to get rid of anger, to get rid of difficult feelings. We face the wall as a mirror to see ourselves. We face the wall as a window to see all beings. We connect with all of our life. And the wonder of this practice is that we can sit still and upright and be present and engage all of it. We don't have to run away from our life. We can actually enjoy our inhale, enjoy our exhale, enjoy our fear, feel it, not be afraid of it, courage isn't about getting rid of fear, it's about facing it. Enjoy our confusion, okay. Sometimes sitting for a day, you know, there are times during the day when, you know, you're tired and everything is foggy, and pay attention to that. Sometimes sitting for a while, you know, thoughts are going through your mind very quickly. Well, just pay attention to that. Don't try and figure them out or do anything with them. Just to be present and witness to this reality is the point. Pay attention. This isn't about fixing anything. It's about actually settling into a place where you can be deeply present with reality. And then respond helpfully when you can. Or at first, just maybe try not to do any harm from your own anger and confusion and craving. So our practice is how to creatively express this in the world and how to integrate this sense of the ultimate, the sense of the wholeness, this awareness of the fullness of the moon with our life and our feelings and what's going on in the world and in our own life and the difficulties we have with our family and friends and coworkers, and the difficulties we have in what's going on in the world. How do we find a way to be present and calm and remember in some way, remind ourselves of Buddha? This practice of, in some ways, this practice of sitting upright is just to remember Buddha. Japanese is called Nembutsu, to remind ourselves, to recollect Buddha on our seat, in our posture, in our body-mind. Buddha just means that which is awakened. And for each one of us, each one of you has your own way of expressing Buddha. I cannot tell you how to be Buddha. But you can find that by settling deeply into what is calm and settled and awake and attentive. What is that for you? This body, mind, this situation. Dogen says, occupying your Dharma position. This life, this problem that you have this week, this month, with this government, or with this job, or with this relationship, how do you settle into just meeting this situation and integrating this experience of seeing the moon for a long time, of recognizing the sky with this situation? So we have various specific practices to help with that. We have the practices of the Bodhisattva transcendent practices. Each one of these is a whole Dharma talk or a whole practice period, but I'll just mention a few. And then we have our 16 Bodhisattva precepts in Sutta Zen tradition. But just to mention some of these. So the practice of generosity. How do we be generous? This includes being generous to ourselves and generous to, you know, maybe we start with the people we already want to be generous to. Then how do we be generous to people who maybe we have a hard time to? How do we when we feel some judgment towards someone, how do we, you know, think about what is their difficulty somebody who's acting in a way that seems harmful or obnoxious or whatever, what is their fear? What is their pain? How are they damaged? How do we be generous to them? How do we give, not just giving gifts, it could be that, but how do we give caring? And also, again, to ourselves as well. How do we be kind? So that's, you know, a whole lifetime practice. Practice of patience is another one of these. There's 10 of these transcendent practices. Patience is not a passive practice. It's a dynamic, active practice, just to wait and watch. Be ready to respond. But sometimes it's just waiting. Waiting in line at the grocery store, or waiting for the bell to ring, or waiting, whatever. How do we do that without just kind of zoning out, but in an attentive way where we're ready to respond and be helpful when we see some way to do that? And maybe a lot of times there's nothing to do, but just be present. So this practice, this dynamic, active practice of patience is very, very important. Another one of the 10 is the practice of commitment or vow. How do we, when our anger arises, when some situation allows us to feel our anger, how do we turn that to determination and commitment to do something helpful about the situation? To resolve, to respond. Practice of skillful means is another, very subtle. How do we, using trial and error, see what might be helpful? It's not about having some instruction manual, but actually paying attention and using what's at hand. Then we have these, we have 16 precepts in the Soto Zen tradition. They start with just taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, in awakening and in the teaching of reality and in community. Returning home to Buddha. They all flow from that. And then there's 10 grave precepts. Disciple of Buddha does not kill, does not take what is not given, does not misuse sexuality, does not lie. Each one of those is also about helping others not to kill or to steal. And each one of those is also about the positive. So not disciple of Buddha does not kill also means how does disciple of Buddha tries to support life and vitality. So each of these is a kind of tool. They're not commandments. They're thou shalt not. They're guidelines. How do we express this deep meditative awareness that we settle into in our meditation, in our everyday activity? And I've thinking about these 16, for me they come down to three things to remember. It's good to study all 16, but basically just to be helpful, not harmful. Basic Buddhist teaching of ahimsa, not harming, but also then to be helpful. How do we, so it's not about being good or bad or right or wrong. It's about how do we help and not cause harm. And then one of them is to embrace and sustain all beings. How do we benefit all beings? It's not just about taking care of our own family or our own community. To see all beings, it's inclusive. So I want to talk about this in terms of what's happening now and this horrible ban against Muslims, but it's many people who are being prejudiced against now. But this practice is about benefiting all beings, and then finally being respectful to everyone and to everything and to oneself. So we're in a crisis now. And I want to talk a little bit about how do we respond to that. Because I think, you know, part of what Dogen is saying is that we do respond. We, the moonlight naturally shares itself with the 10,000 forms. How do we take care of our world now? And we have something to offer to the resistance, as it's been called. We have this meditative practice in which we learn some calm, some resolve, some steadiness, some balance. And I think that's helpful now. But you know, there is now this kind of many threatened communities. There's this ban against Muslims that's, I guess the courts are trying to stop that, but women are in danger, healthcare is in danger, immigrants are in danger, refugees very much, especially refugees fleeing from the wars in the Mideast that that the United States has created. Hispanics are threatened. LGBTQ people are threatened. There's also a threat to invade Chicago and send federal soldiers in. Of course, blacks are threatened. None of this is new, actually, of course. So for minority communities, this has been going on a long time. This is not just about Mr. Trump or the people who voted for him. Many of the people who voted for Mr. Trump voted for him for the same reasons that people voted for Mr. Obama in 2008, because obviously something is really wrong in our society. So I was reminded, German Protestant theologian Martin Niemöller lived 1892 to 1984. He survived 7 years in concentration camps. He famously said, "You know, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out." Because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists. This was in 30s Germany. And I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out. So they're coming for all those people I mentioned. They haven't mentioned Buddhists yet, but here we are. So, you know, I think we have to respond. And we are, and we have been. And there's an interfaith prayer service and rally for refugees today. This is part of our, we've joined the, so, you know, clergy people from many communities are responding. So I think we should also. This is from the 47th Ward Clergy Coalition, which is we're part of. And this is happening on North Damon across from the CVS, just around the corner between Lincoln and Damon, from 1 to 2 p.m. today. So you're all welcome to join with that, and some people from here are going to be there, and Gyoshin Onorasarino is going to speak on our behalf. So that's happening from 1 to 2 today, so I wanted to mention that.
They've asked for people to bring signs because they want media to get pictures, so if you're coming, you have time to make a sign, that would be great.
Yeah, and thank you, Gyoshin, for speaking on our behalf. There's also a board meeting, so I'm not going to be able to come. And anyway, it's so, you know, the thing is, how do we respond? Our practice shows, you know, something about what is possible. And again, we have you know, of all the categories of people under threat, we have all of them as part of members of our Sangha. I particularly want to reach out to Muslims now, because they're sort of first on the list. but Hispanics, Blacks, all kinds of refugees, all kinds of foreigners, LGBTQ people. Our practice is about our practicing all together. It's inclusive. And realizing that we are practicing together, even as we also sit upright on our own cushion and take care of ourselves. There is this coming back to this sitting practice and just realizing more and more deeply how deeply we are connected and in communion with all beings and with this deeper reality. And from that place, our practice shows what is possible and shows, what is possible for humans. We don't need, human history is all this history of warfare and hatred and people separating themselves from each other. It's not that we are all exactly the same. We can appreciate the differences between different spiritual traditions, different cultures. Part of what makes America, whatever America is, great is that we have many different kinds of people together and we learn from each other and benefit from each other. It doesn't mean we become all the same. So we each have our particular way and our particular perspective on seeing this wholeness. And we each have, through this practice, have our own way of going deeper. What Dogen calls Buddha, going beyond Buddha. So that's part of the practice too. So I could keep babbling, but I'll stop, and we have a little bit of time. If someone has a comment or a response, we can take a couple of those. Including newer people, feel free. And again, Kathy, thank you very much for hosting me 10 years ago today. Yes, Eshin.
If impermanence is the truth, and you recognize that kingdoms and empires rise and fall, how do we know that in our practice
Well, I'm not fighting for that. I don't know. The idea. What is the United States? I mean, what is? I don't know. I think it's many things. So there's our government, and then there's, you know, the what's been called the resistance, which is also many things. I think recognizing the complexity of it, and recognizing that, as you say, empires rise and fall, and you know, the new government with all the white men, old white men, you know, the future. One of the signs that was present at the, many of us went to the Women's March, and one of the signs was the future is female. I think that would be a good thing. The future is also not necessarily white in this country. So I don't know. I think I'm not pessimistic about the future. The future is up to us. So, you know, I think of it in terms of values, you know, and trying to see what are the values that come from our practice and our tradition, and looking at how to support that without, you know, making it us against them, because there's not one us and one them. You know, again, it's not about blame or you know, it's or enemies. It's about seeing that there's a lot that is complicated. How do we represent positive values? I don't know if that responds to your question at all. But yeah, there's change. Things change. Whatever we see that we don't like, things change. And change doesn't really usually happen from elected leaders. And real positive change happens from many people expressing, and young people expressing their values. That's what it's, what seems to me. Yes, Alex.
You know, one thing that comes to mind for me in terms of the value systems within the United States, I'm not a historian, but well, I know history. I can't think of another social movement equivalent to history to the civil rights movement in the United States. That's a pretty facet to, I think, American culture and being a representative of what's fighting for in this country. So that's one thing I think of. This is a very valued system within the United States that we're fighting for, standing up for. That's one thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think there have been many worthy movements for social change in our country. Yes, Chris.
There were two things that sort of came to mind. I hope they're somewhat relevant. First one was, I'm reading this wonderful translation of Bandoa called The Wholehearted Way. You might be familiar with it.
Oh, I think I contributed to it, yes.
Yeah. And I just read this part that I really liked about Uchiyama Roshi says, in a directionless society, one of the most significant contributions we can make as individuals is to sit still. And he talked about, you know, if you take it literally, it would mean, well, like, sit still, do nothing. But then he talks about how Bodhidharma sat still for 9 years, and that action has a contribution that's resonated almost 1,000 years later. I mean, here we are. And to me, that's such a great example of how, you know, when Dogen says even if an individual sits zazen, you know, for whatever brief amount of time, the entire universe permeates Buddha nature. And there is this reality that our individual effort to sit and face the wall and to practice the paramitas and observe the precepts have this imperceivable great merit that maybe we aren't even aware of yet.
Yeah, we don't know the effects of our practice. That's just true. And so if we try and measure, you know, well, what have we accomplished, that's a big trap, you know. And but we've seen that there has been change in our country, positive change. I mean, women have the vote now. They didn't 100 years ago. That happened through many women lobbying for many decades. Now, I don't think yet that the women's vote is in jeopardy, but a lot of women's rights are in jeopardy, you know. And anyway, things do change. There's a wonderful passage in that essay by Dogen, The Wholehearted Way, where he says, we see there's no Buddha Dharma in this worldly society, but also there's no such thing as worldly society in Buddha Dharma. Everything, from the point of view of Buddha Dharma, everything is Buddha Dharma. Everything is part of our practice. So, yeah. Yes, Gershon.
Last night I went to a concert and with two friends, and we drove and we parked in the loop, and a huge crowd came out at the same time, and everyone was struggling to get a parking spot at the same time, and we were frustrated, and then the person stopped and let us out, and my friend rolled down her window and smiled at the person and waved and said, "Thank you very much," and then she looked at us and said, "We have to be subversively kind." That is our job. We have to go out of our way to be aggressively kind to everyone. It's our only chance. So I'm passing that along. That was a great thing that we can offer, subversively kind.
That's wonderful. Yes, kindness is subversive now. Aishin, did you have something?
Well, I was thinking along, not the subversively kind lines per se, but just about what you were when you were talking about the future, and how, and I think about karma and how everything we do now impacts the future. We can't control how it unfolds in the future, but we know that it will be based on everything that happens, you know, now. So things may as well happen, and action, you know, maybe has a point, even though we can't really control the outcome.
Yeah, everything we do has an effect. So we can help. So, Dave, last word.
Yeah, on the word of being helpful. I think I get lost sometimes in the scale of helpfulness and want to be, you know, the most helpful sometimes. But one thing that was really beautiful that. I had a really hard week last week, and
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. But for a lot of different reasons. But my friend invited me over to her place, and she just made stew and rice, and we didn't talk about what had happened or anything really. We just kind of had that communion together. And there's something in that, I think. There's that same glow in that act that I think is in, you know, Martin Luther. Was helpful for me to see, you know, that those little things, they're the big things too.
Yes. On that note, we'll close.